Welcome into the latest edition of Be Conscious. I'm Damian Barling, and I'm so happy you are here. I'm so happy you hit the download button. I'm so happy you're a subscriber. We have a tremendous week planned for you, something totally unique to Be Conscious, something that we haven't done before. And I'm really excited for it. Other than Muhammad Ali, I don't think there's an event in sports or a moment in sports that I have read more about, been more fascinated about, watched more about, had more conversations with people about than the moment on top of the victory stand in Mexico City in 1968 with Tommy Smith and John Carlos. And October 16th marks the 50th anniversary of that historic moment. So I thought what we would do this week, again, something a little bit different. I wanted to spend a few minutes today just kind of laying the groundwork of what the rest of the week is going to look like. Tomorrow, which is October 16th, the next episode of Be Conscious is going to feature a conversation with David Steele of the Sporting News. He helped write Tommy Smith's autobiography, Silent Gesture. He's going to join me to talk about that moment in Mexico City, how we got to that moment in Mexico City and everything that happened after that famous moment. Later on this week, we're going to talk with Karan J. Phillips of the New York Daily News. He joined us on one of the early editions of Be Conscious, and he's coming back for a second visit. He wrote a column last week about the impact of Smith, Carlos, and the landscape of sports in the 60s and how that relates to where we are today. Now, I'm working on a few other things. I'm working on a few other guests. I don't know that they're going to work out, but I can promise you we're going to have at least three episodes of Be Conscious drop this week. And so if you're not a subscriber yet, this is a great week to really try out the podcast. Again, today's just going to be kind of an introduction to what we're doing this week, and I'll explain more in just a heartbeat. But if you're not a subscriber yet, hit the subscriber button, hit the subscribe button, whether it's on Google Play, Apple Podcast, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you may be listening from, hit the subscribe button. I really think, especially if you're if you love sports history, I think you're really going to enjoy what we're doing here this week. And if you want to reach out, Damian Barling across all social media platforms, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or if you want to shoot me an email, DamianBarling@me.com. And I said today was going to kind of act as an introduction because I really want to just kind of lay the groundwork of where we were then, you know, to truly understand the magnitude of that moment with Tommy Smith and John Carlos. I think you have to truly understand the landscape of America and more specifically, Black America in the 1960s. Despite the fact Emmett Till, Rosa Parks, and the Montgomery bus boycott had taken place and catapulted the civil rights movement and 1955 and through the late 50s, racial segregation was still very real. In February of 1960, Joseph McNeil, Franklin McCain, Ezell Blair Jr., and David Richmond, all students at North Carolina Agriculture and Technical State University, began the most significant lunch counter sit-in of the civil rights movement. The Freedom Riders began their ride in 1961. It was during the 60s that Malcolm X rose to prominence. It was during the 60s. It was February 21st, 1965, and Malcolm X was murdered. It was that same year that Black football players refused to play in the AFL All-Star game in New Orleans because of racism and discrimination in that city. The game was later moved to Houston, and I've been kicking around the idea of doing a podcast just on that moment and the significance of it alone, which I think we'll just put that on the calendar now and plan on doing that. Perhaps the most influential sports moment of the decade, but maybe perhaps the most influential moment in sports history, occurred on April 28, 1967, when Muhammad Ali refused induction into the U.S. Army. Later that same day, Ali was stripped of his heavyweight title, and he was stripped of boxing licenses in virtually every state he fought in. Now, this led to the famous Ali Summit in Cleveland, which was I know many of you have seen the picture. It's a meeting of some of the most influential sports figures of all time, Bill Russell, Jim Brown, the man who was then Lew Alcindor. He's now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It was also this moment that brought anti-war demonstrations to the headlines. Now, obviously, anti-war demonstrations were there. But again, you have to take yourself back to that moment and remember the weight and the influence the world heavyweight boxing champion carried. You were the biggest, most influential man in all of sports. And it's hard to comprehend that now because of, I mean, I have no idea. I work in sports and I have no idea who the heavyweight champion is because there's probably like 50 of them. The WBO, the WBF, the WFFB, the IFB, the 50, the all of it. Back then, it was one. And you were the man. And that was Muhammad Ali. And he carried that weight. So when he said, I have no quarrel with the Viet Cong, that got people's attention. Not just black people. That got people's attention. 1967 also saw one of the bloodiest and deadliest riots in American history. Detroit. 5 days. Consisted almost exclusively of confrontations between law enforcement and black people. 43 people were killed over those 5 days. 33 of them were black. Thousands injured. Of those 33, 20 of them were either not participating or attempting to de-escalate the riot. 15-year-old Jason Jones was shot in the chest while sitting under a tree when a group of white males were running from the police and exchanging fire. None of those white males were harmed, by the way. Tanya Blanding was sitting on the floor of her second floor apartment near the epicenter of the riots. Police believed they had come under fire by someone in the apartment when an occupant of the apartment struck up a cigarette. Police fired rifles and a tank's 50 caliber machine gun into the apartment. Killed Tanya. No one else. The police later acknowledged it was the wrong apartment. Tanya was four. On April 4th, 1968, Martin Luther King was murdered, setting off another riot in Detroit, as well as nine other major cities. 2 months later, the man who broke the news of King's murder to a stunned Indianapolis crowd, Robert Kennedy, he's murdered at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. In sports, O.J. Simpson began his career at USC, and it's it's amazing to think about that. O.J. Simpson in the 60s, I mean, O.J. has such a weird relationship with race and sports, and he's such an odd figure in the terms of discussions within race, within athletics and race. Believe it or not, despite the 67 and 68 riots, the Detroit Tigers won the World Series. On September 8th, Arthur Ashe became the first black man to win the U.S. Open in tennis. And that brings us here. Mexico City, 1968. It brings us to Dr. Harry Edwards in San Jose State. It brings us to the Olympic Project for Human Rights. Tommy Smith, who many don't realize was one of the fastest men on the planet, one of the biggest track stars in the world, he said this group was about all humanity. Even those who denied us ours. The Olympic Project for Human Rights advocated for a boycott of the 1968 Olympics unless four conditions were met. They wanted South Africa and Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe, uninvited from the Olympics. They wanted the restoration of Muhammad Ali's world heavyweight boxing title. They wanted Avery Brundage, who was the president of the IOC, to step down. And they wanted the hiring of more African-American assistant coaches. Now, despite the movement failing to gain traction, the group became a target for the FBI, the IOC, and white nationalist groups across the country. There's a tremendous story, actually, in the Washington Post about the support that OPHR had from a very unlikely source, the Harvard crew team. Dr. Edwards met with the team in Cambridge. He told this to the Washington Post last week. I tried to be as honest as I could in terms of what we were doing without coming out and saying, hey, we're not looking for a total uniform boycott. But I thought it was important that it be understood that just as whites were involved in the Freedom Riders and voter registration and so forth, we had an obligation to be open to everybody who supported us and to respect them for their contributions that they were making. Now, after meeting with Edwards, six of the crew members agreed to go public with their support for the OPHR. Now, the Harvard rowers announced three goals of their own. They wanted to help the white athletes selected for the Olympic team obtain information about the reasons for and the goals of black demonstration, to simulate an open-ended discussion of the issues between white and black, and third, to discuss means of voicing our support at the Olympic Games. The Harvard crew also vowed to contact other athletes, sending them handwritten letters as soon as those others qualified for the U.S. Olympic team. And they did that. You want to guess what type of response they got? None. Not one response from another Olympic athlete. Not just that. Many of the American athletes forwarded the letters directly to the U.S. Olympic Committee, which, as you can guess, they weren't pleased, and they considered expelling the rowing team from the Olympics. It was actually one of the rowers, by the way, who gave Peter Norman, who's kind of the other guy on the victory stand, the OPHR button that he was wearing. The IOC actually debated whether they were going to send this rower, Paul Hoffman, home the day before the crew final. They didn't, and the U.S. lost, and the head of the USOC told them, civil rights and the promotion of social justice may have their place in various facets of society, but certainly this sort of promotion has no place in the Olympic Games, and particularly when they are held in a foreign country. Now it gets us here. October 16th, 1968. Again, if you haven't hit the subscribe button, do so now. Karan J. Phillips is going to join us later in the week, and we're going to talk about this moment with Tommy Smith and John Carlos, and we're going to talk about 1968 and Mexico City and everything that led to that monumental moment on that victory stand. We'll talk about its effect then and its effect today when we talk with David Steele, who helped write Silent Gesture with Tommy Smith. And we'll have that conversation on the very next episode of Be Conscious. We must teach our children to dream with their eyes open. That's Dr. Harry Edwards. We're going to talk a lot about him this week as well. I'm Damian Barling. We'll see you next time.